I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Joe Hansbauer, the president and CEO for the Corporation for Findlay Market. And Joe, you have a kind of an interesting background. You spent a number of years at Accenture, and now you've just joined the Corporation for Findlay Market, which, how many employees do you have there?
I've got 15.
15
total,
employees?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's a little different than Accenture, which has probably over 100,000.
Yeah, 180,000 worldwide employees. So it's certainly an interesting kind of shift from being part of a large multinational to a really community kind of organization like Findlay Market.
And right before you came to Findlay Market, you were actually in an organization called YouGive.
That's right, yeah.
So how do you take and weave all of these experiences together now to really move Findlay Market forward?
One of the things that I took away from YouGive, it was a very team-based organization, right? So even though you were one of 180,000, you kind of had your core team. And really, because you were serving multiple different folks, you had your employees and your team, you had the clients. And so kind of mixing that together, it translates really well in the Findlay Market world. You know, you've got 37 full-time vendors that are all small business owners. They have their own thoughts about, you know, how they might want to grow their own business. You've got your own staff. You've got the board of Findlay Market. You've got the community that you answer to. And so, you know, a lot of that interaction at Accenture, I think, kind of prepared, you know, for the work here at Findlay quite a bit.
And then YouGive, maybe you can talk about how those experiences are going to help you.
Yeah, I mean, obviously YouGive, it's an online platform for connecting initially students to service opportunities. We expanded it to support universities and corporations as well. But it's all about community engagement. And, you know, Findlay having the role that it does in our community as a community gathering spot, you know, it's the same idea, right? It's about engaging people. It's about engaging community. It's about being a part of something that the sum of its parts is larger than, you know, its singular component.
So are you excited about this new role at Findlay Market?
Yeah, it's, you know, being at the market every day, being able to walk through the market, experience kind of that, you know, old historic downtown public market is vibrant too, right? Which is really cool to see. And it's a melting pot, right? So you got people of all different levels that are participating.
It's interesting you use the phrase every day, because I'll bet a lot of people think Findlay Market's just there for the weekend shoppers.
It's going to be a focus of ours here in the coming months. You're going to hear a lot of that. Findlay Market is Tuesday through Sunday. We're open 9 to 6 every day. Tuesday through Friday, we're open at 9 o'clock on Saturday and at 10 o'clock on Sunday. And it is downtown's grocery. I mean, we're looking to really position it that way and drive, you know, more customers during that week time. The weekend is the cultural experience, and the weekday is when, you know, your hardcore Findlay fans come to do their real shopping.
You mentioned 37 or so vendors. What types of products and foods and goods can people get there?
So you've got everything from, you know, your sliced meat and steaks to fresh fish coming into the market every day. You've got prepared food vendors. You've got Saigon Market, Dean's Mediterranean Import. So literally it's every kind of grocery product that you would see not only at your normal grocery store, but a whole lot of things that you can't get.
And you're really supporting a lot of the small businesses, aren't you, that bring their goods and their foods and so forth to Findlay Market?
Every operator in that market owns or leases their own space. Outside the market is the same way. Each one of those farmers is leasing their own stall to sell their products from, and it's all about the corporation's role in that is bringing people, bringing customers to the market for them to sell to.
Joe, if people would like more information about Findlay Market, what's the website?
It's findlaymarket.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Joe Hansbauer, the new president and CEO for the Corporation for Findlay Market, which is right downtown in Cincinnati in the Over the Rhine District. Findlay Market has survived for how many years? How long is it?
Since 1852, it's been in continuous operation.
1852. That is amazing to me. Why do you think that organization has been able to thrive when it has so much competition from big box grocery stores? How has Findlay Market been able to continue?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. Findlay Market is Ohio's oldest continuous operating public market. And I think not only has it survived, but it is thriving now. And I think you're seeing a resurgence or a rejection of, you know, the big box mentality, the anonymous kind of shopping experience. And what you get at Findlay and what people are connecting to in growing numbers is that interaction with that small business owner. Matt at Kroger and Sons knows more about sausage than anyone else in town. So your ability to walk up and understand, you know, about the custom-made sausages there, understanding about the ingredients in it, has an appeal to shoppers today in ways that, you know, just walking up and looking at a case full of meat at a grocery store might not.
I know so many people that it's just a ritual, you know, every weekend, early in the morning, getting all of the fresh goods. It just really becomes part of their culture.
That's right. You do actually see a lot of that during the week as well. I mean, I think your really hardcore Findlay Market consumers are the ones that come shop on a Tuesday afternoon because you can get in and out. You don't have as many people at the market. So you miss out on some of the cultural experience, but you can get your shopping done and have those long conversations with, you know, the sausage maker and Colonel D at, you know, Colonel D Spices and that kind of stuff.
Are you getting a lot, you know, downtown Cincinnati has added a lot of people living there and has continued to do that. Has that helped Findlay Market?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think we are seeing that a lot of the new Over the Rhine and downtown residents are coming to Findlay Market in larger and larger numbers. You know, one of the things that we talk about a lot is Findlay Market is downtown's grocery, right? So there's been lots and lots of conversation over the last 2 years of, you know, will there be a grocery at the banks? Will there be a grocery on Vine Street? And if there is, and if there ends up being one, you know, that's a great thing for us as well, right? It drives demand. It means that there's more people that need grocery in the urban core. But Findlay Market is downtown's grocery, has been downtown's grocery for 150 years.
What can you share in terms of how Findlay Market got started?
Yeah, so General Findlay set aside that land and gave it to the city for the specific use of a public market in 1849, I think it was, a couple of years in advance, as a wedding present for his daughter. And that land was earmarked to be a public market and has been required to be a public market for its duration. That's the use of that land and why it was created. And since then, it's just been, you know, a gathering place for food.
So what's on the horizon? I know you've got some initiatives for 6 months or so, and then you also have some longer term vision.
Yeah. So, you know, we're going to continue to grow the market in that short term. In the longer term, you know, call it, you know, the next 18 months or so, there's going to be a big focus on the Findlay Market District. We want to start positioning the district for further development, but also creating a focus on Findlay Market being the place for food entrepreneurs. Cincinnati State is, you know, less than 2 miles away. They've got an amazing culinary institute there, and we want to be a complement to that. So we want it to be, you know, about food products, right? Mm-hmm. So the raw ingredients that chefs are going to purchase and engaging more restaurants to purchase directly from our vendors, but also those packaged food folks. You know, you've got the world's best granola recipe. We want to have a place not only for you to sell that, but understand how do you go from your kitchen to commercial kitchen and packaging and growing.
And if people want information about Findlay Market, your website is?
FindlayMarket.org.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Tom, you know, the tax laws changed recently. A lot of folks in 2013 are going to be paying higher taxes. Certainly, most investors who exceed the thresholds are going to be paying significantly higher taxes in many cases.
Well, that's true, but really most people will not be paying higher taxes because most people are under the thresholds. You know, in worst case, you have to make more than $200,000 before you pay more taxes generally under the more recently passed tax law. Now, there's the Obamacare tax provisions that came in that may affect people as well.
Yes, and the Obamacare provisions in terms of the health care, what that means basically is that anyone who has investment income and has adjusted gross income over $200,000, $250,000 if you're married, is going to be paying a surtax on top of the highest tax rate that they would be charged. So if your tax rate for dividends and capital gains is 15%, you're going to be paying an extra 3.8% on top of that if your adjusted gross income exceeds those higher thresholds that I just mentioned.
Right. And if you're in the highest tax brackets, then you're at the 20% rate for capital gains and dividends, and then you add the 3.8% to that. So you're really at almost a 24% rate in 2013 for these higher income people versus a 15% rate.
And you know, when you add into the mix the fact that certain itemized deductions that you were able to take entirely over the last few years. There's limitations on those now, as well as personal exemptions. When you have a reduction in the amount that you can actually deduct from taxable income, that really means you've just gotten a tax hike. So when you add the incremental impact of those reductions, then people can be paying as much as 44.5% on certain types of investment income, such as interest.
Right, which, they used to be paying 35% last year. So by my simple math, that's about a 25% increase in the tax rate. And for capital gains, it's going from 15 to as much as almost 25. I think that's about a 60% increase. So that's the little bit extra that they're getting to pay.
Right. And I know it's a lot of numbers we're just throwing out here, but what I hope people listening today take away from this is go do the math on your own tax bill. Make sure you completely understand how much you are paying in tax. And if it makes sense to revise your investment portfolio so you can minimize the investment tax increases, specifically the surtax, it's certainly something that makes sense to take a look at.
There are some good things in this tax law, especially for businesses. There were lots of credits that were reinstated and go through 2013 and longer in some cases. The depreciation rules were extended, so you were able to deduct up to $500,000 under the expensing provision of 179. And they reinstated or extended bonus depreciation, so you can have a 50% deduction of the cost of property that you place in service in 2013.
So the key here, though, is they're trying to give business owners an incentive to go out and spend money, bottom line, and they're giving you a tax benefit for doing that. One of my favorite credits is the research and development credit, because so many people don't know about that. They think that it's only if you're in an experimental laboratory situation, but there are so many other types of businesses that qualify for the research and development tax credit. And it's an amazing credit because it offsets your tax dollar for dollar. So if you're doing anything that's innovative, anything where you're actually checking out and trying new processes, take a look and see if you can qualify for that credit. Bottom line, take a look at your taxes. Make sure you're taking advantage of all the tax breaks and deductions that you can. And certainly, don't pay any more tax than you have to. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens,
your business advocate.
I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Crystal, today our topic is the proposed Ohio budget, and more specifically, the proposed changes that will affect businesses, or at least closely held businesses in Ohio.
Yes, this is actually a column that we wrote in our Inquirer BusinessWise section a couple of weeks ago, and it was the question about an LLC, and it was a service-based LLC, and what the proposed tax change that Ohio's Governor Kasich, what impact that would have on this small business.
And the question was, will it help us or hurt us? And the answer was, yes, it will probably both help you and hurt you, depending upon which part of the sales tax you're a part of and which part of the income tax. But overall, the income taxes, according to the proposed budget, and this may change as it works its way through the legislature, there's going to be a 20% reduction in income tax rates over a three-year period, so that the top rate for income taxes falls to 4.74%.
And that's a 20% cut across all nine brackets.
Right. And that's a cut from where it is today, which is lower than it was two or three years ago. So it's gone steadily down, which is a big improvement in terms of how much tax you pay, particularly on your business income. The other big change, which is kind of a radical change, is that for pass-through entities, which are basically sole proprietorships, partnerships, and S corporations, they will be able to exclude half of their income up to a total exclusion of $375,000 from income, period. So in essence, if they have less than $750,000 of income, their taxes have been cut at least in half.
On that business income. And we've talked about this many times. To be frank, in our mind at least, I think I can speak for you, Tom, it's an inequality.
On this one occasion.
The Ohio tax system exempts C corporations from paying any Ohio income tax. Even the largest corporations in the state of Ohio do not pay one dime of income tax in general. Small businesses who operate as pass-through entities, and as you mentioned, it also includes LLCs as a subject of our column, they have to pay tax on all of their business income, whether they take it out or not, at the highest marginal rates. It's just not fair. So this is a good first step in equalizing and leveling that playing field.
Yeah, so the place where the CEO of Procter & Gamble goes to get a shoe shine has to pay income tax, but Procter & Gamble doesn't.
That's right.
For state income tax purposes.
For Ohio income taxes. So as you mentioned, this is very good news for Ohio's small businesses who operate as pass-through entities.
But there's also some bad news.
Yes.
Or
at least different news.
Well, I call it bad news. They're greatly expanding the sales tax on services.
That's right. And historically, all services were exempt in the state of Ohio unless specifically included. The governor's proposal is to tax all economic activity unless it's specifically excluded. It's just the reverse. According to the governor going to a service-based economy, the jury's still out on what really will happen here because the legislature has to go through it. It will be revised. So just stay tuned. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Mary Hurlburt. Mary is the Community Outreach Coordinator for Lifespan Credit Counseling Services, and Mary's a frequent guest here with us. And you always have something very interesting to talk about. And today we're talking about college students and credit cards. It's very personal because I've got a child just about ready to go to college next year. Mm-hmm. I thought that the credit card companies would not be soliciting her, but you're saying that they still are soliciting college kids.
They are, but evidently this is what's called a soft solicitation. They're not allowed to actively solicit, but evidently sending your daughter information is not actively soliciting. So you won't find them on the college campuses at the tables anymore. But there are still special credit cards for college students. They are still getting credit cards. All they have to do is prove they have some kind of income. And by the way, many of them are counting their student loans as income. Credit cards are not bad. Credit cards, even for college students, aren't bad. But we have to have wise use of it. College students are still graduating with excessive credit card debt and student loan debt.
Yes. Fundamentally, credit cards can be a great tool to use.
Absolutely.
We all use credit cards, don't we? The key is, I think, that college students, and really any students, and many adults for that matter, have never been taught fundamentals of financial issues. Our children have grown up in a society of instant gratification, and unfortunately, it's caused a lot of problems.
It's caused huge problems. So what parents need to do is teach their children about credit card use, fiscal responsibility, financial responsibility before they go off to college. Because believe me, when they're college freshmen, they have other priorities. It has to be a habit before they head off to college.
Mary, I've seen people recommend that the college students get a secured credit card. What is a secured credit card?
A secured credit card is a great idea for college students because it builds your credit history. You deposit, or your parents can, a certain amount of money in a bank, and they will give you a credit card with a limit that equals what's in that savings account. They won't be raising the limit, so you won't start out with $1,000 and wind up with $20,000 in debt when you graduate. It's a great way to build credit. It's a safe way to build credit. It's much better than co-signing for your student's credit card because you have no control over that credit card if they co-sign. This way, with a secured credit card, everything is in their name, the responsibility for paying. It's a great way.
And it still helps the student build a good credit history, hopefully a good one.
Yes, it still helps the student build a good credit history, and it can still help ruin the student's credit if they don't pay. But it will not impact the parents at all.
How would you best prepare them for not only the soft solicitations that they're going to be receiving, but how to use a credit card wisely?
We can put our students, when they're even younger, as authorized users on our credit cards. Bring them in when you pay the bill, not just when they charge, so that they can see how this is done, so they can see how responsible you have to be about paying on time. They need to learn how to handle checking accounts before they leave, so they understand about direct deposit, so they understand when funds are available, so they understand about how to pay online. No young person is writing a check anymore. No need to have a checkbook. Everything's done online, so the parents just need to show them how to do it and allow them to watch them doing it.
If people would like to reach you, find out more information from you directly, what is your contact?
Just give me a call at 513-476-6096.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Mary Hurlburt. Mary is the Community Outreach Coordinator for Lifespan Credit Counseling Services. You've been a frequent guest on our program talking about consumer credit, helping people with consumer credit problems. And we've talked a lot about your credit report and your credit scores. And how important is it that people monitor their credit reports?
It's just becoming more and more important, and it's also becoming more and more difficult to get things corrected on your credit report. And the earlier you find them, the easier it will be to correct them. So it's just almost imperative that everybody pull at least one free credit report every 4 months. There's three agencies. Each one's required to give you a free report every year. So every 4 months, just pull a different credit report, make sure everything on there is accurate, and immediately try to correct any inaccuracy on that credit report, because it's going to have an impact on your ability to borrow money, live where you want to live, refinance your home.
Apparently, it's pretty easy to report something incorrectly. Crystal and I had a problem at one time. I guess a creditor had sent us a bill to an address that we had been in 8 years earlier. We never got the bill. They turned the bill over to collections. As we were refinancing our house, all of a sudden this problem comes up, and we're like, I don't remember ever seeing this. So as we investigated it, we finally figured out where it came from. And we did actually owe the money. It's just that we had never received the bill. It really delayed that refinancing maybe by a month. We did ultimately clear it up.
Right.
But it took a very long time.
Not to mention when you try to buy goods online and you try to open up new accounts, they get your information. That can really delay everything in your life if there's a little blip on your credit report.
If there's a blip or if there's a major thing on your credit report. And one of the things that the Federal Trade Commission just found out is that sometimes the credit report that we receive as individuals will be perfectly clean, but the credit report that lender receives may have that $100 charge on there. So it's even more important that you be very, very careful. Every time we ask for credit, we risk someone making an error or somebody else's information being on there. And there may be nothing that you can do, but the earlier you find out there's an error, the better off you'll be.
What other advice do you have? Because with everything being so available, there's everything from people gaining access to your information electronically. What other advice do you have for people to protect themselves?
The main one is to pull your credit report. Only ask for credit when you really feel that you need it. Don't go into stores and just keep opening accounts because you get 15% off. You may want to close unused accounts, but then you have to be careful that you're not lowering your credit score. Depends on where you are in life. But never let your credit card, for instance, out of your sight.
Do you and your organization help people who want to bolster their credit score? Can you help them and show them what they need to do to better their score?
If someone comes in for a whole session, we don't just bring people in and say, here's your credit report, we'll show you how to fix it. But we will review anyone's credit report with them when they come in for a regular financial wellness checkup, where we will run through a budget, we'll discuss budgeting issues, and your credit report is part of your lifestyle and your budget. So yes, we do discuss those and we do work with people.
And if people listening would want to contact you, what is your information for them to reach you?
You can just call me directly at 513-476-6096.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Ray Attia. Ray is the founder and the CIO of Definity Partners. And Ray, CIO stands for what in your world?
It's not Chief Information Officer. It's actually for us, it's Chief Innovation Officer.
And Ray, I know that you are quite the entrepreneur. You have 17 businesses, and you're also now an author, and you've developed this amazing book called The Fearless Frontline, The Key to Liberating Leaders to Improve and Grow Their Businesses. Over the years that you have been in business helping so many companies, how do you take all that knowledge bring it together, and then really go out today and help a company improve and grow?
I think all that knowledge ties into a system. Organizations really have to look at their entire organization as a system. And every aspect of the day-to-day running of the business connects with your ability to grow. So when I look at a business, I look at it as a system. So for example, you know, many companies right now are trying to find new ways to grow. That's typically disconnected on a daily basis where somebody who in the front line is doing their work. They don't see how the work that they do every day eventually affects their ability to innovate new products. So what I've done with the book and with the model we have with Run, Improve, Grow is connected your customers with your business, with your suppliers, connected the front line with your middle managers, with your senior leaders, and looked at all aspects of that, connecting the process, the leadership, and the technology, how that all fits together. It's really hard as a leader to look and say, okay, today I'm going to compartmentalize, I'm going to work on employee engagement, and tomorrow I'm going to focus on technology, or the next day I'm going to work on my supply chain, or the next day I'm going to work on cost. You have to look at them all together holistically. And that's kind of what I've done with the model is look at the best of all these organizations and said, how do you make sure that you innovate, but you also have the best cost? Mm-hmm. How do you create employee engagement, but also you've got very strong systems in place so that you can have reliability? And there's no compromise. One thing I write about, there's no compromise between quality delivery and cost. There's also no compromise between excellence and financial performance, as well as creating an organization that the employees truly feel empowered.
Well, how important is it to grow your business? You know, during the recession, as we're even coming out of it, lots of companies did a good job of improving in terms of cost cutting and becoming more efficient with less people and maybe less cost. But growing seems like a bigger hurdle.
It definitely is. And the benefit of growth is talent. Okay, without the ability to grow, it's really hard to attract and retain talent. And people say people are our most valued asset. But in reality, if that was the case, then the first question people should have on their objectives is, what have you done to grow your talent? As opposed to, how are we doing on sales or profitability? So truly, if that is. So the importance of growth is the ability to continue to give people the opportunity to have more challenges to grow and develop personally and as an organization to maintain relevancy. What I talk about, the definition of grow to me is not how big you are. It's your relevance. So you could actually be a smaller company, but more relevant. To me, that's growth. Where organizations struggle is they're going after more of the same kind of work. To me, that should be part of your day-to-day run.
Many businesses, especially you mentioned smaller, middle-sized businesses, they don't even know, right? They just know what they've got to get done, do what they've always done in the past, and assume that that's going to be different, right? If people would like information on the book, where can they get it and how can they reach you?
They can go to rayatia.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Ray Atiyah, the founder and CIO for Definity Partners. And Ray, CIO in your world stands for?
It stands for a Chief Innovation Officer.
And I know, Ray, that you are quite the entrepreneur. You have 17 businesses. You've been involved in business for 16 years or so, Sweet 16?
Yeah, Sweet 16 since starting my first one and a number of years prior to that with Johnson & Johnson and a privately held company as well.
And you also are the author of The Fearless Frontline, The Key to Liberating Leaders to Improve and Grow Their Businesses. What's in the book, Ray? If someone's looking at the book, what would you expect them to take away if they read the book?
What they'll take away is how everything we do every day connects with the rest of the business. Many folks are in one area of the business, whether it's in growth or day-to-day execution, whether it's in operations or sales. What I'm hoping that they'll take away is seeing how everything they do connects with everybody else.
Well, and it's big, bold letters, The Fearless Front Line. What are you trying to suggest in the book as it relates to the fearless front line?
Well, the front line of every company typically represents 80% of their workforce. And when they're fearless, they act. You know, I did a seminar a few months ago, and I asked the question to the group. I said, how many folks tell their folks, we want you to think outside the box? So they all raised their hand. And I said, keep your hands up if you want your folks to act outside the box. Every hand went down. And I said, look at you. Do you want your people just to think about it or act about it? So being fearless means you're acting. You're not paralyzed. You are actually acting. And you got 80% of the workforce who wants to come in and do something. And you just need to give them the environment to be fearless.
What about the other 20%?
Well, it's the other 20%, your leadership team or your management team. And what we want them to focus on is proactive improvement and growth. For them to have confidence that your fearless front line runs the day-to-day business on their own, and they want to, this team can go out there and set the new future. They're looking at the new business model where the front line is basically making sure your current business model is running flawlessly and reliably.
And I guess that theory of that and the actual practice is if everybody's working on day-to-day, nobody's looking forward and it's hard to plan for the growth.
Yeah, and typically, and you see this in smaller and mid-sized companies, what happens is when the leadership is spending their time in the day-to-day running of the business, nobody's looking around the corner. And for me, when I look at leadership, leadership is being able to see around the corner and see what's not obvious. But when you're able to trust your front line to run the day-to-day, it liberates them to really focus on improvement and growth.
And Ray, you developed this methodology, this management system called Run, Improve, Grow. What are some successes and how has it really benefited? How has your clients benefited?
Well, I've had, you know, over the last couple of years, a couple hundred different clients. And the one benefit that I will tell you is the employee pride that comes through. The employees take ownership to their day-to-day business. So number one is you've got employees who are really, really engaged. You know, my first client grew from a $20 million business to over $1.5 billion. Now that's rare. We have a number of Fortune 500 companies, actually three of them, I think, in the Fortune 100, who are turning their very professionally well-managed company and actually embedding entrepreneurship into them and be able to spend time on innovation and growth.
So if people listening would like to learn more about your company, Definity Partners, or get access to the Fearless Frontline, your book, how can they do that?
For Definity Partners, they can go to DefinityPartners.com. And depending on where they're located, they can contact the managing partner there. And for the book, they can go to rayatia.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is John Mack. John is the Director of Business Development for Orange Financial. And John, Orange Financial is so much more than an investment and advisory firm. It really goes well beyond that to help your clients develop a different mindset about their whole life. Maybe you can talk about how you teach people to give first.
You know, unfortunately, in this country today, we have people, they make money and they spend it when they incur debt and they're not saving enough. And of course, the last thing they're thinking about is protecting the things that are most important to them. So the giving is way down on the totem pole. In fact, it's on the bottom. So what we like to think of is if we can change that, we can get people to thinking about abundance, thinking about the glass is full, not half empty, thinking about being all the things that they do have. You know, we're a very wealthy country. We have more than most, and we have to be grateful for that. It starts with gratitude. It's that idea that, you know, I can give. And what happens is, of course, that people then protect the things that are most important to them so they can give. And they're giving to their families, they're giving to their employees and their community, and then, of course, they're saving. And that's reducing debt. And when it's all over, what's left over, they can spend guilt-free.
And when you look at successful people, it does seem that the common denominator is most of them really have that mindset of abundance, as you call it, or being grateful.
If you think Napoleon Hill said, if you think you're rich, you will be rich. If you think you're happy, you will be happy. It's all about that, the mind, changing the mind. So the idea of that abundance mindset comes from the ability to embrace the abundance that we have around us and be grateful for it.
Well, and conceptually, a lot of people have the problem of whatever they make, they spend, and they never get around to the saving, the protecting, or the giving part of it. Because no matter how much that is, and that includes people who make fairly high incomes, they're still spending all their income.
Well, how do you start that conversation when someone walks into your office to actually encourage them to reverse that mental paradigm shift that you just mentioned and start with giving first? How do you even go down that path with someone?
You know, what we are, we're not motivational speakers. We're not trying to push. What we're trying to do at Orange Financial is to pull, to get people in the right frame of mind where they are guiding us on a path that they have chosen. And once we get that permission, then we can begin to focus on the individual issues that they have. So it's a very easygoing, non-confrontational way of allowing people the privilege of sharing with us some of the issues that concern them.
And maybe you have a story or two of a success that you could share?
Yes, I can. I can think of a success. I can think of a businessman who was a very successful owner of a company. He was making $1.6 million a year, and he had a terrible debt problem. And he confessed to us that not only was he unable to make ends meet, but he had lost the ability to communicate with his wife about his finances. And we worked with him, our teachers worked with him, for quite a while, and he could report back to us that he is now, quote-unquote, debt-free. He is communicating with his spouse. His business is turned around. You know, we have countless stories like that, but it's not only about people like that. We have taught people who couldn't afford to send their children to school how to find a way to do that, and we have a whole program designed to work with students and their parents in schools, which is called NAFTRAX. And
yes, I've heard about NAFTRAX. Yeah. That's a great program.
Yeah.
If people would like information about Orange Financial, what is your contact data?
I can be reached at 513-919-0381 or at john_mack@lfgco.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is John Mack. John is the Director of Business Development for Orange Financial. And John, you guys have this brand new game that's actually, it's not a game, it's a program that's designed for small business and their employees, which is called Game On. I saw it. It's amazing. Maybe you can share what that's all about.
Actually, the Game On program, it's a lifestyle program. And it helps individuals transform what we consider a mindset of scarcity to one of abundance.
And what do you mean by that, a mindset of abundance?
If you're in the right frame of mind, you can transform your life. But to do that, there are certain things that have to occur. It's a psychological training that we're suggesting. And that leads to the ability to develop what we call this mindset of abundance, which is really all about giving. It's living to give.
And is part of that because people develop bad financial habits as a result of other influences like stress?
Well, I don't think there's any question about that, Tom, and our work has shown us that the stress is really the leading contributor to a lack of productivity in the workplace. And as you probably can guess, the one thing that keeps people up at night the most is money.
You know, John, going back to this whole discussion of a mindset of abundance and your comment about living to give, is your idea of abundance, meaning just think about what you have to be grateful for, as opposed to all the things in your world that you feel like you may be lacking?
You know, Crystal, it's all about that half glass is full scenario that we see so much of, and people come to work every morning blaming somebody else for their lack of success. We think that our program will specifically help people to develop that personal responsibility they need to succeed.
And it's designed around like football. It's actually a program that you take people through. And it's for small businesses and their employees. Maybe you can talk about how you approach a business and what kind of benefit someone could gain from Game On.
Well, the reason that we came up with the Game On scenario is because we thought it represented, you know, what a sports team is like, that is what we call leaving it all on the field. And I think there's some examples of that. If you remember the Cincinnati Reds in the 1970s, they were certainly leaving it on the field. Michael Phelps, when he swam, he was leaving it in the pool. Mm-hmm. And so what this is designed to do is to have people showing up and suiting up and being productive. So it's the idea of arriving at the field. It's game on. It's leaving it on the field. And if you have that kind of a mindset, of course, we suggest that that's going to improve the productivity in the workplace. It's all about how people think.
John, if people would like more information about Game On, about Orange Financial, what's your contact?
They can call me at 513-919-0381, or they can email me at John, that's J-O-H-N, underscore Mack, M-A-C-K, at lfgco.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your business advocate.